Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From the green space here at WNYC, it's a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show. The end of war, the end of the Euro. We will spend much of the program wrapping up our series, End of War, by asking what could ever make a new abolition movement a reality, a movement to abolish war. But that's later. First, we have a very special treat. Adam Davidson and Alex Bloomberg from NPR's And This American Life's Planet Money team here on our green space stage. And listeners, you can watch today's program as well as listen. If you want to see Alex and Adam, you can do so right now. See the live streaming video on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And green space audience, please welcome Alex and Adam.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you.
And guys, you can promise us, can't you, that we will understand the Euro crisis within a half hour? Because we also have to abolish war today. So can we solve the Euro crisis efficiently?
I think we can explain it. Solve it, I think, needs at least 45 minutes.
Right. We'll see if we can stretch. So let's begin with a chart. It's visible here in the green space.
Oh, yeah.
And listeners, you can see this too if you're streaming our video feed, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And it has the deceptively boring title of Interest Rates on 10-Year Government Bonds by Percent.
Right.
Now, boy, I would never linger on this if I came to it on page 29 of the D section of the New York Times. So make this interesting for us, Alex, and make this visual for our listeners out in Radio Land.
Well, that's the difference between you and me, Brian, because when I first saw that chart, I remember seeing it, and I remember literally gasping when I saw it, because that chart is the entire story of the European debt crisis right there in one chart. And basically, so for the people who are listening and can't see, it's a whole bunch of squiggly lines, basically. And you can sort of imagine a thread with sort of the ends frayed at either side. So in the middle, that's the 10 years of – and what it is interest rates on 10-year bonds. And what that means is basically it's a chart of how freaked out are people to lend different governments in Europe money. And so on the – left side, where you see the very, very high line, that's a high interest rate. That means that people don't want to lend that country with that line money, and that country is Greece. And then you see that line goes slowly down, and all those lines converge for 10 years, which is basically the period of time where the world was equally happy to lend Greece and Germany and France money at basically the same interest rates. And then something happened in around 2008, where all the lines diverge again, and Greece explodes right back up to where it was, you know, paying 16% interest on its debts.
So what's really remarkable to me, once I stopped and, you know, lingered on this a little bit, is the way they did converge for like a decade. Because I don't think anybody who stopped to think about it believed that Greece really had the same kind of fiscal fundamentals as Germany, or take any other examples. But for about a decade there, through the 2000s until, you know, the calamity started, all of these interest rates on 10-year government bonds were identical.
What happened, this was part of the whole point of the euro, that the whole idea was to create one mega economy, like the U.S. has. I mean, you might lend the U.S. government money, and maybe that's being used to build a highway in Mississippi, or maybe it's being used to support, you know, the next generation of internet infrastructure in Silicon Valley. Bond buyers don't care. It's just U.S. government debt. And the idea was, let's create a European-wide one economy. Now it looks so ridiculously obvious. I mean, it reminds me several years ago when I needed my dad to co-sign a loan, or else I couldn't convince the landlord to give me the deal because of some problems I got into in my 20s with credit cards. And
this is how you become qualified to lead the Planet Money team.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. This is roughly my personal credit history. And no,
you and your 10 siblings who used to all have the same credit.
I have to say, just being an economics reporter, we're what they call countercyclical. The worse the economy's doing, the better we're doing, I should just say. But
So it was kind of like Germany was co-signing Greece's loans. Germany was co-signing Ireland's loans. And there were all these implicit questions that nobody really probed. What happens if Greece gets in a lot of trouble, or Spain, or Italy? Is Germany going to bail them out completely? Is Germany going to just cut them loose? And now, of course, you look back and you think, how in the world was this not on everybody's mind? Because what this line is telling you, it's not one person sitting in a room deciding what the interest rate is. This is millions of investors, you and your pension funds and your insurance companies, some of the smartest people in the world who aren't interested in European economy, you know, strength. They just want to make money safely. All those people collectively just sort of bought this fantasy. It does remind you a lot of some fantasies we bought here around the same time.
So Alex, he says a fantasy. Did the banks know that essentially this was a fantasy? That just because the EU is telling you that Greek bonds are just as good as German bonds, that doesn't actually make it so?
They didn't know it was a fantasy, as you can see by the chart. Like, they all, you know, what this chart is telling you is that, like, you know, 10 years earlier, everybody in the world thought that Greece was a really risky bet, and so they were charging 18% to lend the money. And then after the euro, they thought Greece was a totally safe bet, and they were charging them, you know, 4%, 6% to lend the money. And so no, that's what's so astounding about the story to me, is that people didn't know. If people had known, they wouldn't have done it.
And then the easy lending that resulted made things worse because it created a housing boom and a false sense of prosperity due to the easy credit?
Exactly. So one of the amazing things is in 1995, Greece had to spend something like 19%. You know, most people in this room can probably get a credit card for less than 19%. And now Greece is only 16%. Actually, Greece got itself in really bad shape this time. I almost feel like logically that number should be 20, 25, 30%. Because so what happens is suddenly, just imagine you're in Greece and your entire life, if the government has to pay 18% for interest rates, then you as a consumer, you're paying 30, 40%, which basically means you're not borrowing money. You're living based on what money you have in the bank, the cash you have in your hand. And so you have this entire nation going through this period of, for the first time in their life, being offered car loans, housing loans, vacation loans. People would get, you know, buy second homes and third homes. Hannah Jaffe Walt, our reporter who went to Greece, literally every person she talked to had stories of, I went from a really old, you know, Greek-made car to a Mercedes and then two Mercedes and then a vacation home. But all that debt, which was fueled by the fantasy, again, the echoes of subprime housing in the U.S. are pretty obvious, means that Greece today is in truly awful shape. Now, I should say the government was the big problem in Greece. They were the ones borrowing the most, funding the Olympics, creating entire bureaucracies just to employ people who didn't actually show up for work, all the stuff you've heard about. So, but also the Greek consumer was just transformed into this consumption and borrowing machine.
And Alex, where does the housing bubble enter into this? Because there was a housing bubble in weaker EU countries, partly as a result. Like, how do you say credit default swap in Portuguese?
Right. Well, so what's interesting about what happened throughout Europe? What happened was the same. So throughout Europe, people were able to borrow money much more cheaply in Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal. But what they did with that cheap money was very different throughout the continent. So in Spain, generally what they did is they borrowed the money and built housing developments and resort developments. And that's where – and then the same thing happened in Ireland. But in Italy, there wasn't such a huge housing bubble. People did other things with the money. And that was a lot of government borrowing. In Spain, in Greece, it seems like the government borrowed a lot of money and then people borrowed money to fuel their consumption, but not necessarily for housing. But the big housing problem happened in Spain and Ireland. And that's why you see so many problems in Spain today. Spain wasn't such a basket case in terms of their government. Like, they had relatively moderate policies. They were pretty well run financially, but they just took that cheap money. You know, they were one of the high lines before, and then they went down to a low line there. They got really easy money. And a lot of that went to the private sector, and the private sector built up a lot of vacation housing, basically,
and
for
then
the rest of Europe.
When we go back to the chart and look on the right side of the timeline there, the remarkable thing is that all these lines kind of resort to their relative starting position. It's as if nothing had ever really changed. And it looks like what happens to light when it goes through a prism, if you're looking at the graph, folks. There's the blue line for Greece shooting up to 16%, and the red line for Portugal going up to 12%. Meanwhile, France and Germany's lines are relatively low. So how did the masters of the universe, who run the investment banks, not realize that they were vulnerable to this? Obviously, we had our own delusions in this country where people didn't think that there could be a housing bubble bursting in the way that it did.
Well, part of this is there was this worldwide phenomenon going on, which, you know, you remember the Alan Greenspan years. There was real talk among very sophisticated economists all over the world that central banks had figured out how to conquer the business cycle. In other words, the booms and busts that have been central to capitalism for, you know, 200 and whatever years was done. We figured that out. And we figured out through all these complicated financial instruments how to parse out risk so precisely that there is no need for booms and busts, no need for credit bubbles or credit. And obviously, again, this looks absolutely ridiculous today, but this was deeply held faith. And if you think of someone like Paul Krugman and Dean Baker on the left, or you know Peter Schiff and others on the right, who saw it at the time, you know, they were screaming at the top of their lungs, "No, you're dreaming!" But they were completely outside. Obviously, Nouriel Roubini being another famous example, they were completely outside the conversation. They were seen as freaks, irrelevant freaks. And so there was this collective view that we've entered basically a new age, that computer technology, global commerce, global financial capital flows meant that we could have high growth, low unemployment, and low inflation permanently, unlike any other time in human history. Turns out we can't.
and if I could say also, you know, masters of the universe, they have rules that they have to play by. So if I am managing a, you know, several billion dollar fund in 2003, and maybe I think this is all a fantasy, but I have several billion dollars that I have to invest somewhere, and the interest rates are all the same throughout Europe. So where am I going to put it? Like, I can't – there's not really much for me to do. I could maybe try to short the European bond market, but then I have to pay money while I'm waiting for the collapse to happen, and I would have been paying money for 7 years. And all my pension fund manager friends would have been laughing at me, saying, like, what are you doing paying this money? Right. You're losing money.
And, of course, we almost abolished the cycle of bubbles and bursts of bubbles, right? Before 2008, there hadn't been a bubble burst since, let's see, how many centuries was it? Oh, yeah, 2000, when the tech bubble burst.
Right. Well, I mean, that was
Brian,
a specific...
Brian, that was a different bubble.
That was a different bubble.
Apples and oranges,
but it
man.
Wasn't a... Anyway, it technically was different. I'll just be boring and say that.
I'm just not financially educated enough to not see the relationship.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that's the history. We're in the present crisis. We're going to take a short break with Alex Bloomberg and Adam Davidson of Planet Money. And by the way, folks, these two will be at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8 p.m., and that conversation, I understand, will focus more on the U.S. economy.
That's not true, by the way. It's all about Europe. Yeah.
Also about Europe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that, but we've got information about that show on our website. Listeners, if you want to buy tickets to the 92nd Street Y tonight and go into this in more depth and even more fun with Adam and Alex. But we will be back here in a minute with a look at why they see Europe as a slow-motion bank run and a look at what comes next, including possible solutions. And listeners, you can call up because this is Alex and Adam Explain the World, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And remember, you can watch live video at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we continue from the green space. From the green space here at WNYC, it's a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show, the end of war, the end of the euro. We have with us right now Adam Davidson and Alex Bloomberg of NPR and This American Life's Planet Money. And remember, folks, you can watch our program today as well as listen. We are streaming live video at WNYC.org click on Brian Lehrer Show. If you here in the Green Space audience want to ask a question of Adam and Alex, you can raise your hand. We have people who come around with microphones. Listeners, 212-433-WNYC. As we explain the Euro crisis and the chances for recovery, Adam, your colleague Zoe Chase recently had a piece on Morning Edition that argued that what has happened over the last couple of years is a slow-motion bank run. Do you use that term?
We do. I mean, it's sort of what happened in the U.S. as well. I mean, if you think of a classic bank run from the Great Depression, you know, it's a case where fear begets fear, that someone's worried about – a bunch of people are worried about the health of a bank but not doing anything. But as soon as one or two people start to take their money out, more and more people start to take their money out. And pretty soon, you know, famously, no bank can survive a total panic. That's why we have FDIC insurance, so that, you know, everyone who has less than $250,000 in any given bank account won't freak out. But there's not a – there's not an FDIC insurance for the world. The European Central Bank has very pointedly decided not to offer the equivalent. So you have all those bondholders who are very confident in investing billions of dollars in Greece and Italy and Spain. They're looking at these interest rates hurtling up. And remember, when interest rates on bonds hurtle up, that's new bonds that are issued. That means if you have the old bonds, so if the world is saying Greece needs to pay 16% interest on new bonds, and you're holding like five-year-old bonds that are paying 4% interest, you've basically effectively lost a fortune. And so you're thinking, do I get deeper into Greece? Do I get out of Greece and suffer a loss? And also what you're thinking is everyone else thinking the same thing? And if they're thinking it, I need to go first. And just to make the picture even uglier, if it then becomes a conversation about will Greece exit the euro, would you rather have euros in a stronger, you know, German-dominated euro system, or would you like drachmas? Nobody wants drachmas. Greek people don't want drachmas. And right. So that becomes an even more amplified bank run. Some days it's sort of miraculous to us that the system has been as stable as it is. I certainly, if I had $1 billion or $1,000 in a Greek bank, that would have been gone years ago. I don't understand. Oh, wait, I don't want to spur a bank run.
Right.
It makes sense to be very somber and slow-moving.
But Alex, on this idea of no FDIC insurance for the world, there are basically three ways to stop a bank run, right? Mm-hmm. Insure deposits, slow it down, or borrowed money. So I guess the preferred option for Greece so far, for Europe, has been number two, borrow money.
Well, yeah, and that's harder and harder because Greece, as you can see by that chart, it's paying more and more money to borrow money. It has to pay the interest rates. And that chart is a little bit, I think, misleading because right now, you know, you hear talk that Greece is essentially – there isn't really anybody for the government of Greece to borrow money from right now. They're borrowing it from the European Central Bank to a certain extent, but there's not really anybody out there willing to lend Greece money. And so if I'm – let's go back to our Greek bank – you know, bank customer with, you know, you have $1,000 in your Greek savings account. It's in euros right now. If you're worried that Greece is going to exit the euro, go back to drachmas, and all of a sudden your 1,000 euros are going to be 1,000 drachmas, and that's going to be a lot, that's going to be worthless essentially, it's very easy for you to just press a button and then have it transferred to the German equivalent, the German bank, because it's all euros right now. So you can just put your money in a German bank. It's pretty simple. And so there's no way to slow it down. You don't trust the government. The government is the problem. So you don't trust the government to insure your deposits because the government is what's going to reduce the value of your deposits by leaving the euro and reverting to drachmas. So that doesn't work. And they can't borrow money. So it's in Greece, the problem is especially acute. It's really hard to figure out what to do to stop this, and especially once it starts.
So what do they think is going to happen by creating these additional loan funds? Because you painted a scenario where everything kind of gradually falls apart by doing what they're doing. They must think something's going to come together.
Well, it's really – this is the really particularly hard thing about reporting on a potential bank run is that the one thing that everybody knows that you can't do is say – here's our plan when the bank run happens. You know, you can't be the government and come up and sort of say, okay, so when we convert to drachma, this is how it's going to work, everybody. You know, so if it happens, it will happen suddenly. Like, that's the only way for the government to do it, because if they start talking about it, it just intensifies the problem.
There are, in my mind, two ways of thinking about Greece right now. And I should say that Greece is not Italy, Spain. Like, Greece is a special case. It's not relevant, really. It's so extreme. It's not really relevant so much for the rest of peripheral Europe. But So one possibility is in the elections in a few days, they're just crazy and they're going to vote in a bunch of extreme left and extreme right nut jobs, and it's going to be the biggest disaster in the world. A more positive way of looking at that is is they are going to vote in extreme left and extreme right nut jobs, but it's a brilliant game of poker that basically Greece's one shot is to panic Germany so much. If Germany's like, oh, my God, they're going to kill themselves. They're going to jump off the bridge and take all of us down with them. We have to bail them out. And luckily for Greece, it's a small enough economy that really can happen. Europe, Germany, France, the healthier economies could really just float Greece for a while. They could not do that for Spain or Italy. They're just too big. So that's the positive way of looking at what's happening. That would be very good for us in the U.S. if that happens, by the way, is that it's like, oh, they're so crazy that we really just have to suck it up and bail them out so that the Greeks don't have to suffer austerity and all the things they don't want to suffer.
Of course, if the right-wing nut jobs and the left-wing nut jobs are elected into power, at least the centrist nut jobs who are there now would lose their jobs. Let's take a question from our Green Space audience. Hello.
Hi, my name is Radha, and I actually had a question. You just explained the euro crisis very, very well, and I feel like what's been done so far has had lukewarm results. And my question is about what can be done. And I feel like, maybe this is exaggerated, but I feel like World War II, Germany had to be bailed out. You know, and now Germany's in a position, Angela Merkel's in a position where she can do things. And, you know, the whole austerity stuff, it hasn't quite worked. And I feel like we're right at the precipice of a crisis. And the domino effect is very real, kind of what you were talking about with the bank run and all that. And I'm not just talking about Greece. There's Spain, Portugal, Italy, Ireland. And as we all know, it's a global economy. So my question is, I know that the German people don't want to go and bail anybody out, but how much, I mean, is Angela Merkel going to come to that place where she kind of has to? Or is there another solution out there that I'm just not seeing?
So first off, our understanding is it's like 2/3 of Germans don't want to bail people out. Shockingly, 1/3 do and seem to for sort of noble reasons as far as and a lot of our reporting from Germany shows that they really take seriously, like, we were pretty bad in World War II and we kind of owe it to the world. This is good for peace. I mean, it's sort of beautiful to hear that kind of talk. You know, what Europe has, imagine the U.S. now, how crazy our political system is now, if every fiscal decision, each state got basically a veto on every fiscal decision. I mean, luckily, our forefathers created not just monetary union where there's $1, but fiscal union where there's one federal government and it's not 50 state governments that each has to approve all these key decisions. And so that makes Europe, you know, if you talk about game theory, it's almost impossible to get all the member states to sort of agree unless it's truly each and every one of them faces certain economic death unless they get together. The problem is we keep thinking they are at that moment, that they've hit bottom, that it can't get any worse, and they prove us wrong again and again and again. So there is this pressure on Angela Merkel, but you can certainly understand. Germany has been fabulous. They didn't have a housing bubble. Their wages have been stagnant. They didn't experience the wild growth that the rest of the world did. I have a lot of sympathy for like a middle-class German worker or factory owner who's like, wait, what? No, I just spent 10 years being really responsible. I don't want to do that. And that's what she has to face.
And there's a long-term, I think, question here too. I feel like, you know, there's that I feel like that point of view has a lot of sympathy. Like austerity is, you know, making things, certainly driving the economy down, making it harder for them to pay back the debts that they've incurred. They are deeper in debt now than they were at the beginning of this crisis. They're going to get deeper in debt even further with, like, some of the measures going forward. So they obviously need to grow. The more austerity is forced on them in the short term, it makes it harder to grow. That being said, from Germany's perspective, they have to be thinking, like, how are we possibly going to get paid back when we loan this money to Greece? Greece is, you know, a notorious, in terms of, like, they're just collecting the taxes. You know, they're just horrible. It's like a horrible, horrible system. The taxes don't get collected. It's notorious. It's been reported everywhere. Their economy is in really pretty bad shape. Like, they don't have a lot of there's not, if you look at Greece, you think, where's the growth going to come from that's going to generate the income to pay back the debts that they've incurred? So I'm also sympathetic from that point of view. Like, yeah, we can keep them afloat, but then how long? You know, how long do you keep on, you know, 10 years from now, are they going to pay back those bonds? Or 10 years, are we going to have to keep pumping money? And is it going to be, like, essentially, you know, forever?
Let's take a... You want to finish that thought?
She said, what solutions? I don't think this is an economic idea problem. I think five technocrats who were given dictatorial powers could solve it. I think you're right that probably most economists would agree that austerity is probably not the best plan right now. I think it's just a political problem. You need each of the member states, 17 or whatever it is, to deal with their own internal politics and come to some consensus. It's kind of like global warming. It's just very hard to get all those actors to agree to some collective good that might not be short-term political good.
Thank you. Good morning. My name's Linda. Thanks very much. This is fascinating. My question is, I've heard an awful lot of discussion and read a lot about what happens within the euro, exactly what you're discussing now. With regard to what would happen if Greece would leave, I've heard no discussion about what would happen in Greece. I mean, from what I understand, they've only got one machine that could even print drachmas right now. Obviously, all the economies are incredibly interwoven. It strikes me that there would just be a catastrophe in Greece, and then probably the euro would have to come along and bail them out to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe. Could you just comment on that, please?
Yeah, actually, I spent yesterday and the day before on the phone with Greek economists asking that exact question, and what they told me is until the May elections, when we realized we were going to have this kind of runoff between the extremists, we wouldn't even discuss it. It was Greece leaving the euro and going back to the drachma was too awful to contemplate. But now they have to contemplate it, and we'll find out what happens when this election is finished. But you're exactly right. I mean, if just imagine how low Greece's global reputation, how incapable they are of borrowing money and buying stuff from abroad now when they have the euro. Just imagine some new drachma being run by neo-Nazis and communists. It's hard to imagine many people being excited to sell them food or sell them healthcare products. And so you're exactly right. I mean, we talk about money and interest rates, but we're talking about, you know, babies in neonatal units dying. We're talking about old people not being able to get the basic calories to survive. We're talking about a real, honest humanitarian crisis and seeing the winds in Greece. You know, you start thinking about real violence. There's been test violence, you can say. But so it is too awful to contemplate, yet also possible. The thing, as Alex said, though, is as soon as there's grown-ups sort of, you know, European Central Bank officials, and some would argue they're not exactly grown-ups, but let's leave that aside. As soon as they seriously talk about Greece leaving the euro, the real fear is then people start looking at Spain and Portugal and Italy, and then you're talking about, if I can say, real economies. You're talking about similar levels of crisis and chaos, and that's the nightmare scenario. If somehow the world could be guaranteed, it will only be contained in Greece. It really wouldn't affect us, other than, you know, our hearts would go out to the poor Greeks. But that's the fear. It's like a bank run. Once that bank runs, then everyone's looking at the bank on the next block. That's the true terror.
We are just about out of time because we only do have the half hour to explain it, not the other 15 minutes to solve it. But just very briefly, Alex, what is the role of the United States in all of this?
I don't know if there is necessarily a role for the United States in here. I mean, I feel like there's – I think the United States wishes it could play a role. But then the United States has the same problem that essentially Germany has, which is the problem is money. There needs to be a big money transfer from the rich countries to the poor countries. And so it just seems impossible here that the United States would step up and say, all right, we'll write the check. You know, that's not going to happen. So barring that, like, I don't know if there's, you know, the United States can sort of maybe encourage, but I don't know if there's much of a role to complain.
And I would say, again, it's a political issue. I mean, there is a financial solution that makes sense for the parties. You could imagine a technocratic U.S. Treasury Secretary meeting with the Germans and the French and the Dutch and kind of coming up, all right, we'll put this much in, you put that much in, $100 billion here, it's not that much, we can really solve solve this. But just imagine President Obama saying, you know what I think I'm going to do? Bail out Greece and Spain and Portugal and Italy. I mean,
in an election year. Yeah,
and Congress being like, all right, yeah, we'll give that to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time he says bail out Medicare, somebody says, we're going to be the next Greece.
Yeah.
But I think that's another show.
Yeah.
So remember, everybody, Adam Davidson and Alex Bloomberg from the Planet Money team will be at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8 o'clock. Talking about all these economic questions. You can get more information via a link on our page. You can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll continue in a minute here in Green Space with the finale of our End of War series. For now, please thank Alex and Adam.
Thank you.